Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin of Third Space, and we are here in the beginning, the very beginning episode of our seventh year of doing this. So somehow, for all of the 6 years plus this one, we've managed to be here every Sunday morning live on Facebook and built this incredible bank of things that we've said and conversations we've had and sources we've brought from all kinds of places in our worlds. And I'm sitting here in kind of amused appreciation of what it has taken to do that and where we've been in the world and what's been going on in our lives when we've done it, and the original commitment, Justin, of we'll just do it. We're not going to make it fancy or get it produced or do anything that gets in the way of just pressing go. And we're still just doing that thing. And I'm so grateful that we managed to do it and we're still going. And I didn't do it actually, but last week I thought, oh, I think I'm going to go back to the beginning and see who on earth we were at the start. I think that's still quite a good idea to go back and wonder. Also, the other thing I do, Justin, you might have a different situation, which I expect you do, but I often go back and see what haircut I had at which time if I'm going to the hairdressers. And I don't know what to ask for. I scroll back through Turning Towards Life. Think, oh, yeah, no, that haircut was good. That, because I think my hair's kind of changed lengths. And when I can't find a picture of what I want, I think, oh, I'll just go back to one that I think I like on the turningtowards.life homepage. When I look at the video snippets that you put at the front of each thing that you upload onto the website. So who knew that Turning Towards Life would be a haircut monitor, and that I could, whenever I go in, scroll through all of the range of options that I have for myself. So thank you, Turning Towards Life, for that. And thank you, everybody. Some people have been here right from the beginning and dip in and dip out. Some people have just joined us and learned about us and everything in between. And it's quite a revelation to ever receive an email from anybody, isn't it, Justin, when they kind of say what it's like or tell us a story about themselves or something, or how it's moved them, or when they listened and what was happening in their life or something. So please, if you're listening to this, we love hearing from you. We love responding. We love wondering about you and hoping to meet you one day. And in place of meeting you, receiving an email or a message from you is really quite something. So thank you for that, everybody who's ever done that. Thank you. And Justin, thank you for choosing this source today by the lovely Norman. And thank you for always having something to choose so far.
You're so welcome. I want to say to anyone who does want to email us, hello@turningtowards.life will get you our way. Or you can say Lizzie or Justin at turningtowards.life, or you can reach us in our Facebook group, which is rather lovely. You're very welcome to come and join there. Yes, what a joy to be beginning year seven, Lizzie. And as we were just talking about before we began, a very dear friend of ours, Sophie, wrote to us this week to point out that after 7 years, so we're not quite there yet, all the cells in our bodies will have completely renewed themselves since when we began. We'll be completely other people in some way and completely the same person. So 6/7 of the way through that process, I feel very, very committed to continuing. And you know, this thing about your hair, it reminds me of two things. One is I can't do that with Turning Towards Life for myself. But I have enjoyed, as I've watched back, watching your hairstyles change. That's been very, it's been, but it's been the real marker. You know, when you know someone for a long time and they're important to you, as you are to me, and we see one another a lot, which is a great, great gift. We do this every Sunday. So you're one of those people in my life who I keep on seeing. It's hard to see change when change is goes slow and it's incremental. And in fact, I think I'm sure we're going to get into this when we talk about our this source from Norman this morning in some way. So for me to track I've changed too. My hair doesn't change, but my face changes. It's not quite as obvious and not quite as dramatic, but I look back over our over our time, and I see us both being different, and it helps me appreciate what it is to be alongside other humans. Actually, you specifically, Lizzie, seeing you change over time, but that we're always changing, and we don't see it always. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we think things ought to change very quickly, we forget that things are changing all the time as well, you know. So it's been really wonderful. I have lots of photos, but I don't have, you know, I don't, we sit in the same place every week for 6 years and face one another in the same way for 6 years, and we've got records of it. So we see time through it. And it's one of the great gifts of, I think, of taking up any kind of ongoing practice, is that it may look like the practice is just the thing that you're doing, but it also becomes many, many other things simply through the faithful repetition and the longevity of it. And so it's quite a lovely conversation to enter into at this beginning. So very glad to be here. Very glad to be welcomed in the way that you welcomed us. Very glad to be accompanied by so many other people. I always want to say, if you're with us and interested in these kind of conversations, please do go and check out wearethirdspace.org. This is a third space thing that this got born from, and we're up to so many things in the world, coaching and teaching coaching and all of that. And you can always have a look at what's happening there. I also want to say, please tell your friends about this conversation, people you care about, and share it with them. And now I want to talk about the source. So this week's source comes from this book, Training and Compassion, Zen Teachings on the Practice. I'm reading this back to front on my screen. On the Practice of Lojong by Norman Fisher. And Lizzie, you'll know that this is one of the books that is we give everybody who is a student on our year-long professional coaching course. But I've been reading it for years, and it's one of those books, because it's divided into 51 or so different slogans to wake us up to our lives, to really have us look at our lives in fresh ways. What I've been doing is taking one slogan at a time and reading it, and then making myself something so I can remember it and carry it around with me, and then learning from it as a sort of practice. And I thought I would complete doing this book that way in about a year, and I looked back and I started in 2016 or something, and I'm about 11 slogans in of 51. So it looks like it's going to be the rest of my life project, but I've recently started again. And so this little passage is from the middle of a slogan, a set of slogans, which are about so apposite for our conversation. They're about turning obstacles into the path. In other words, not turning away from what's difficult, not running from it as if somehow it shouldn't be happening. Many things shouldn't be happening, but whatever is happening is happening. And then the question is, how do we respond to what is happening without denying it, convincing ourselves that it isn't happening, any of that stuff. It's a beautiful series of slogans in this book, and this is just from one part of that. And here it goes. When tough times cause our love to fray into annoyance, our compassion to be overwhelmed by our fear, and our insight to evaporate, then patience begins to make sense. To me, it is the most substantial, most serviceable, and most reliable of all spiritual qualities. Without it, all other qualities are shaky. The practice of patience is simple enough. When difficulty arises, notice the obvious and not so obvious ways we try to avoid it. The things we say and do, the subtle ways in which our very bodies recoil and clench when someone says or does something to us that we don't like. To practice patience is to simply notice these things and be fiercely present with them. Taking a breath helps. Returning to mindfulness of the body helps, rather than reacting to them and flailing around. Paying attention to body, paying attention to mind, and when possible, giving ourselves good teachings about the virtue of being with, rather than trying to run away from, the anguish we are feeling in this moment.
Justin, when tough times cause our love to fray into annoyance, our compassion to be overwhelmed by our fear, and our insight to evaporate, then patience begins to make sense. To me, it is the most substantial, most serviceable, and most reliable of all spiritual qualities. Without it, all other qualities are shaky. The practice of patience is simple enough. When difficulty arises, notice the obvious and not so obvious ways we try to avoid it. The things we say and do, the subtle ways in which our very bodies recoil and clench when someone says or does something to us that we don't like. To practice patience is to simply notice these things and be fiercely present with them. Taking a breath helps, returning to mindfulness of the body helps, rather than reacting to them and flailing around. Paying attention to body, paying attention to mind, and when possible, giving ourselves good teachings about the virtue of being with, rather than trying to run away from the anguish we are feeling in this moment.
Thanks, Lizzie. I'm actually enjoying the feeling of patience that has come from being involved in this conversation. It's one of those places in life where has been a very good, for me, way of simply staying in something without trying to make it go a particular way. Actually, it was one of the, you know, when you were talking before about how we committed to not producing this and not overdoing it, and just so we could have it go out in the world in a way that might not look like patience, like we're in a rush to get each one out. But actually, I think the bigger arc of this has been a practice in not trying to game an outcome. You know, I know we've hoped that having these conversations would be a way of reaching many people and sharing the kind of things we get up to in the work that we do and the kind of concerns that are important to us and welcoming people into all of that. And I'm realizing as I read it that there would be a way of feeling a certain kind of urgency about it and then trying to discharge the urgency by getting grasping about it, like calculating about how we could engineer this precisely so it just did a thing, you know. And if you have the right kind of jingle or the right kind of editing or, you know, any of those kind of things, and we've said, no, let's talk and see what happens, which is what we're doing now. I'm appreciating that as we begin. And Lizzie, I love, actually, really, really, when I heard you read it, I think there's something quite remarkable in Norman's framing of patience as the opposite of what we do to push our difficulty away. In other words, so much of our impatience with ourselves, with one another, which often turns into unkindness, you know, the evaporation of compassion, love, and insight. Mm-hmm. So much of that comes, at least in me, I think it feels really true, when I cannot, or more often am not willing, to let myself feel how sad I am, or how upset I am, or how hurt I am, or how afraid I am. And I'm trying to get rid of that, you know, all the times that I've been impatient with the people I love, all the times have been because there's something I really, really, really don't want to feel, and I'm trying to get someone or something to make it go away. You know, and it can turn into hurry up or shut up or, you know, some form of this, or how dare you, or go quicker, or it can turn into I've been thinking a lot about how many things I've got in my, you know, in my inbox and on my desk, all things that need doing, and how often I turn my feelings about maybe I should be more efficient, or maybe I should be more skillful, or maybe I should be more intelligent, or maybe I should be better at admin, or maybe I should. I turn those feelings into a kind of rush. And the funny thing about it is that in most circumstances, rush doesn't actually help anything. There are a few. There are emergencies where rush really helps. No doubt about it. But as far as I can tell, most other things don't benefit from it. And what a price it is that we pay by hurtling into the world in order to, quite understandably, avoid feeling things that we don't want to feel. What price we pay over time. So I'm very touched by Norman's invitation that we might find a way back to our own bodies, and that might help us stay with the anguish of the moment.
When you're talking about rushing, Justin, I'm thinking of all the ways that I often rush in to conversations that are happening, and what a different experience of life it is to kind of watch for a while and be patient with what's unfolding, because it may not need me. And I mean, that sounds terrible. It probably doesn't need me, is the truth of it, at all. But I know I have a compulsion to be like involved in life, in things. And without this kind of patience, I think what I do is kind of wade in, and then I'm in, and you can't not be in then. And so I'm really appreciating the invitation to patience. And as you say, like when I'm launching into something, it's often from a place of reactivity rather than a place of center. And then when I come to my center, I'm like, well, I don't even need to say anything. Like, this isn't mine. It's not that important that I say something. There's much more resource here than that reactive part of me was able to see. And I think everyone's just fine, and I don't have to do as much as I think I have to do, or something. So I notice that part of me that rushes in to make things better. And as I'm sitting here, I'm wondering what that rushing in kind of saves me from. And maybe it saves me from, I don't know, maybe disillusionment or something. Like maybe it saves me from having to, gosh, I don't know. This is the interesting thing. When you said that, Justin, about, I know that every situation is because I'm not wanting to feel something. I'm not sure I've got that kind of awareness of why I'm doing what I'm doing. I think that's the challenge for me in this passage, actually, is like, well, you know, all the reactive parts of me that I just lose the plot when something happens that's triggering. And then I think, well, I should be more patient. It's like, there's a danger for me that this turns into some kind of superego message of like, there's something wrong with you that you're reacting that way. So I'm also really appreciating the invitation that you're making of incrementalness as well. Because like, you know, if we're Zen practitioners and we're sitting in a Zen center with our legs crossed or something, it's quite different living in a household and doing things and having a family and, you know, all of those things. So I know that my history involves like lots of meditation and lots of introspection and lots of things like that I've learned. And because I guess that was my starting point, I've come to realize that realness and real life and things that happen and our reactivity and our madness and all that is to be welcomed and not fought. So I think I have to hold this passage in a certain way where, like you were saying at the beginning, there's an invitation and I need the understanding simultaneously that this isn't a way of setting up. There's something wrong with you when you're angry, or there's something wrong with you when you're reactive, or there's something wrong when you're making people hurry up because you're being impatient. But it's like, as you say, it's happening. And how do we be people that welcome our experience and deepen our understanding of ourselves and our motives, and not expect us saying the word patience to ourselves to make it all better in the moment or something? This doesn't work for me. You know, if I stand there and say, Lizzie, you should be being more patient, I don't know, I've never had any results from that. And maybe people have, but I don't live in the kind of system that just when you say something, things change, or when you have an intention, even things change. It's you know, intentions get born in complex ways into reality over time, as you say. And so I have to be really careful with all of these kind of spiritual teachings, that they don't turn into a bat to beat myself over the head with, and try and use them in the wrong way. You know, try and use this as a kind of, you know, I read this when you posted it, Justin, and then yesterday some domestic kerfuffles happened in the kitchen trying to cook a cake with a three-year-old, and I lost it. You know, I was like, no, we cannot throw flour like all over the kitchen. I can't. And I was thinking, I should be being patient. And it didn't work. Taking a breath didn't work. I was just really annoyed, and it was really hard, and I regretted it all, and I didn't like it, and all of the things. And then all kinds of other things arose, like, well, what if that was just a genuine response from me of my annoyance? Like, humans get annoyed. Like, is that not, and is repair not the best thing that I could do, rather than pretend that I'm not a reactive being, pretend that I'm not cross about things, pretend that I'm not irritated, pretend that I'm not reactive or whatever. So I feel like I have to hold this in the way I think that it's intended. And I'm sure Norman loses his own plot in all kinds of ways, probably, hopefully, who knows, or he might be enlightened or something. But I don't think it's helpful that I take these things as kind of these invitations to kind of invest in my superego that tells me there's something wrong with me all the time, because I can't be this thing.
I love that way of talking about it. And of course, I mean, it seems to me, in listening to you, you're such an artful advocate for the messiness of the everyday and the necessity of the everyday and our everydayness, which I love about you, and I love about the contribution that you're making to this conversation. And it shows what you're showing me so strongly is, like any of these quality, I actually really love the fact that Norman, he calls it a quality, but he also calls it a practice.
Yeah.
And they're different. There is a really superficial way of reading this that sets up good, bad, right, wrong, better, worse as a person. And better people are more patient, and in the middle of the flour going all over the kitchen wouldn't be freaking out. But like you say, I think that's a huge distortion. I understand where that comes from. It's part of our, I mean, it's sort of in a way part of the consumer culture in which we live, is that if you could, Lizzie, if you could have that kind of patience, you'd be perfect and everything would be fine and everyone would be fine and you'd be in. It's funny, it's making me think about the film Everything Everywhere All at Once, and it's great. Mm. I don't know if you've seen it, and it's great. Celebration of the craziness of everything, you know, everything's just flying everywhere all the time in that film, most of the time. Yeah. So I think it has to be something different. And what I could hear in what you were saying also is that if you look closely at that kind of really simplistic view of patience, like it's some kind of you know, it's where that phrase, actually, I think is a misuse of it, you know, being very Zen comes from, as if Zen, which is Norman's tradition, was being calm. And I don't know Norman well, but I'm sure he's very human, like an ordinary person, like so I want to speak on behalf of all of the times that we flip out in various ways. And if patience were that simple thing, like you said, it instantly sets up something very, very poisonous, which is a kind of inner comparison with ourselves, an inner harshness, which is, now I failed to be patient. Now I have to berate myself and bully myself into being patient because I wasn't the patient one when. And there's this lovely thing that Norman says in here where he says, the practice of patience is to notice what's happening and be fiercely present with it. That's what it is.
Mm.
So coming to know, like you said, like it's really, I've been in those situations in the kitchen with the flour flying everywhere. It's like, I'm really annoyed. I was really annoyed. And I may be really annoyed for all kinds of really, really excellent reasons, or I may just be really annoyed. And it seems to me that our avoidance of that is actually where the root of the suffering in all of this comes from. And I know this well in myself, where I'm angry and someone will say to me, are you angry? And the part of me that goes, no, I'm not, I'm fine. That actually is a really impatient part of me, because that's the part of me that goes, it's not okay to really acknowledge that something is here, that I'm feeling it very strongly, that maybe someone's treated me badly, or maybe I've made a big mistake, or maybe...
Mm-hmm.
So the sort of inner impatience, which is... I'm reading patience not as... in its sort of common sense reading, which is something like going really slow and not being affected by anything. I'm reading patience here as... committing to be present with what is, without pretending that it isn't something else, and then responding appropriately to the thing that there is. So, you know, when you said sometimes you want to get super involved in something and it makes you feel better to get involved, and you realize when you look at it truthfully that it's probably better for you to stay out of it and it will just happen on its own. That's patience in this definition, because it's looking truthfully, noticing what you feel about it, and then having... and then having available, just giving ourselves as much space as we can, which can never be more than we actually can. And that's also part of patience, is except, you know, seeing our own limits. Like, if I'm really caught up in something and really certain of something, can I breathe in? Like, can I breathe in enough space to give myself a little bit of choice to say, do I really need to do this now? The answer might be yes. The answer might be, I feel like I've got no choice. And the answer might... But any time what we're doing with patience is trying to shut all of that down and pretend it's not there. It's not the patience that I think Norman's writing about here. It's like a sort of smothering patience, or a beating yourself up patience, or a... Patience is learning as much as we can to be truthful. What we're actually experiencing, and truthful about the choices that we have in responding to it.
Mm.
Not slowing down and tuning out and somehow being still and silent in the middle of the swirling storm of flower, which might actually frankly need dealing with.
You know, it's so interesting, Justin. It's so lovely to hear what I'm experiencing as a kind of a redefinition of patience. And I feel like there must be already, or maybe it's what we should be doing, some kind of dictionary of redefining things that we were told when we were little and that we haven't really let go of the meanings of before. So if you were to have we would have our own dictionary of words, how we would write about patience as we're seeing it now, versus just be patient, which means stop and let the world happen to you for a while, because this thing needs to happen and you don't have any choice and power in it. Certainly that's what meant in my world. And then as you're talking, I'm going, oh, hold on a second. That's like a redefinition that's possible of all of these words. And it's so easy to take a word at the way that it's already existed in you. And then once we start talking about the word, it's a little bit like David White and his book, I think it's Consolations, where he just writes about friendship and what that actually means versus what we think maybe friendship means in a kind of normal, culturally normal way. And how relieving it is to feel and hear redefining happening. And how possible it is for there to be a word and let it be a portal into a bigger explanation of life, rather than taking for granted the implicit meaning that it has in each of our worlds. So I'm now kind of fantasizing about, oh my gosh, we could take, I don't know how many words, anguish, we could take feeling, we could take paying attention, we could take fierce, you know, all of these words that are so potent. It's like behind each of them is like another set of potency. And I'm really curious about that and amazed at the fact that we can always make new definitions of things together in this in-betweenness. We can actually have a conversation about it, and really what's happening for me now as well is reading this little passage by Norman, and I feel like I say this all the time, But reading this book on my own is so different to reading a bit of it and having a chat about it. Is like what I do with things inside myself is really significant. And if I'm not processing what I'm doing with something inside my own system, I could be taking this anyway, and it not being the right way to take it for, in service of my well-being. And so I'm really struck by what it means to be in conversation about the things that we're learning, and to learn from one another and with one another and in community, rather than sitting in my bedroom reading a load of books and thinking that that's what's needed or something. And I fully, you know, God knows how many books I've got. You can probably see, like, in my mirror slightly, there's a kind of line if you're watching on the video, everyone. But, you know, I love poetry books. I love all kinds of philosophy and, you know, all of these things. And yet being with them in my own system only, it's not going to work in the way that aligns with the reason I bought the book in the first place, which was to learn. And so in these conversations, I feel like it just shows me how much it matters to be in conversation about this.
The very exciting things for me, Lizzie, in hearing you say that is you and I know that we are heading our way towards making exactly that available to people, that we're going to open the doors to Turning Towards Life and start to have a way that people can come and join us live on Zoom and be in conversations with one another in exactly the way that you're talking about. So I'm reminded of that intention, and I'm reminded that we've already started laying plans for it. And I wanted to say it now, because it may be that any of you who've stayed with us to the end of this conversation, you might find yourself feeling the possibility of coming and joining us in this conversation in exactly the way that you're talking about. So thank you for bringing way it that way, Lizzie. And of course, that's what we've been doing for 6 years, is bringing these into the in-between rather than inside ourselves. And thank you for being here, Lizzie, and being such a wonderful partner in conversation and discovery. And thank you, everyone, for being with us. And we are going to close for now, and we will be back strongly into our seventh year next Sunday morning at the same time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.